75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show. With your host, Jerry Pippin.
Well, this is Jerry Pippin, and once again we're broadcasting from Dolan Springs, the gateway to Lake Mead. That's what the sign says, Ron.
As a matter of fact, I never saw that sign all the times I went up the road.
It's there, right, Wes Bateman? That it's there. I've seen it a few times. But there also I think they erased it. It was also the gateway to the Grand Canyon, you know, the west.
In fact, the road that comes in here, you can take it all the way to the backside of the Grand Canyon, I guess.
That's right. That's it.
And we stopped down at Critters and before we came to see Wes Bateman, and I'm getting to know this place, Wes. It doesn't take too long, though, does it?
Well, it's nice and quiet, isn't it?
You know,
all we got once in a while is a coyote will walk by, or the cottontail will hop through the yard. That's all the excitement we have in Dolan Springs.
But it's a good quiet place for you to do the work, and we talked a little bit about the SETI messages last time we interviewed
sure.
you. And we'll get into that here in a little bit because it's just earth-shaking what you're coming up with. You really accomplished quite a lot, I
guess.
Understand.
Since we last talked, we've had could be considered breakthroughs. It's hard to classify our findings. They're exciting to us, of course. They help us get a focus. The messages have now become understandable and coherent. In other words, we feel they're more explainable. That has been a problem, you know, how to explain what the messages are saying. I think we can pretty well say that the first part is speaking of the Great Pyramid and its geometry. There's reference to many physical features of the pyramid. And, of course, there's also reference to the hydrogen atom. And to the system itself, what I call the raw system.
We talked about that mathematical system before, and you went into great detail about it. I don't think we were taping at the time, but Rod, he's quite the mathematician.
A serious mathematician.
He kind of left me in the dark, Wes, but I got the general gist. Don't you tell our listeners what we're talking about this mathematical system. It's an ancient system, right?
I discovered it in the fall of 1975, actually. And when I was researching the geometry of the Great Pyramid, it's been a... actually, it began with me getting three early Christmas gifts. A lady friend, her husband had passed away, and we were kind of staying with her during her period of grief. And she was a piano teacher. She taught piano and so forth. One day she came home with two things. She said, Wes, I want you to early Christmas present. And she gave me an address book. And in the back of the address book was a number of formulas and mathematical terms and things like that. And a small handheld calculator. And And right on the tail end of that, another friend who came in to visit had a book by Peter Tompkins, which was The Secret of the Great Pyramid. And so with those three things, I just, of course, I was working in the area of biofeedback, especially what they call alpha biofeedback.
Now, is this with the music and you bring the plants up?
Biofeedback is when utilizing an instrument with electrodes. For instance, in the case of alpha, you would put the electrodes on both sides of the temple, and then a person would try to relax, and while doing that, the machine would beep. So that's called a feedback signal, a signal. And as a person learns to cause the machine to continue beeping, they go into a state of relaxation. That was called alpha biofeedback training. Okay, but more on to the system. I noticed in the book that there was reference to that the pyramid had two numbers that had long been associated with it. One is pi, which is the ratio between a circle's diameter and its circumference, and the other is a number known as phi, phi. And that number has long been recognized as having a relationship to just about everything in nature. Plants, the value of phi is 1.618033989. Now, if you divide that into 1, you get 0.618033989. Which means that if one is a number whose reciprocal is actually its fractional part or its decimal. Phi is a number. There's such a thing as what you call phi proportions, or that are golden rectangles and things of this nature. But it was in the study of the pyramid that I had realized that over the years people were very confused about what actual units of measure were used in the pyramid. Of course, in the days that they believed the pyramid was built, the ancients were using units we call cubits. A lot of people, when you say cubits, they remember Noah's Ark, 300 cubits, and so forth and so on. Well, the long cubit is from the tip of the longest finger to the shoulder. And the short cubit is between that longest right. finger and the elbow. And so over the years, there's been a controversy. In fact, they called it the Babel of the cubits, because everybody had a pet cubit. It was everybody said no, it was built on this cubit, it was built on this one. And anytime your cubit wouldn't fit, they'd say, well, that's just due to primitive work. The primitives did not have a sense of accuracy. When you look at that pyramid, it is an amazing structure. It covers 13.5 acres. It's over 481 British feet in height. Okay. Now, there was a fellow in the 1800s, I think his name was Taylor. He was the publisher of an English newspaper, and he he determined that the height to the base, there was a pi relationship. In fact, of 1/2 pi. That would mean that the height to the perimeter of the base was actually as a radius of a circle would be to a circumference. Well, of course, in those days, the pyramid was very difficult to explore. The whole outer area was covered with rubble. The Arabs had stripped away the 22 and a half acres of limestone that once had covered it, and took that limestone into Cairo and built mosques and palaces with it. So they were using it as a quarry. But the whole lower level was hard. You couldn't navigate over the stuff. So it's very difficult to determine the actual size of the base. And then there's many explorers that came into it. But the idea of it being pi, pi had been carried out to tens of thousands of points of the decimal, and it never been rational. So we called it an irrational number because you can't write it as a fraction. And we called it transcendental as well, a transcendental number, because it is the comprehended is beyond the range of our senses, that it just goes on and on and on. Well, when anybody brought up the idea that the ancient Egyptians, just the ancient Egyptians, knew about pi, everybody would laugh or say, "You're fooled to think that." But for years, that has always been a question. If pi was that embodied in the pyramid deliberately with knowledge, or was it by
happenstance? It doesn't seem to me that that would be the case. It was by design.
Well, we have found out it is definitely by design. Here's where the biofeedback comes into it. Alpha biofeedback. A human being produces four distinct brainwave patterns, which are called delta, theta, alpha, and beta. Delta and theta we produce when we're asleep or unconscious. Theta waves we produce mainly when we're dreaming. It relates to what they call rapid eye movement. Although a child who's hyperactive will generate theta while they're awake. Let's jump over alpha for a moment. Beta, we produce beta waves when we're aware of everything that's going on around us. You know, we're conscious of everything. Now, coming back to alpha, alpha we produce when we're relaxed or in a passive state of mind. Now, the average alpha wave that we produce is about 10.6 cycles. 10.6. That's very important, so just hang on to that for a minute.
Okay, I will. 10.6.
That's the average alpha that we generate, okay, more than any other alpha wave, 10.6 cycles. Now, this is where I had come across a paper written by a Dr. Polk and Fishen from the University of Rhode Island, and it was titled "The Human Resonance of the Earth's Ionosphere Cavity." And what this paper explained was that lightning generates very low frequency, ELF, extremely low frequency, waves. And these waves bounce back and forth between the ionosphere and the Earth. So in other words, the ionosphere and the Earth act like a natural resonance cavity, similar to a resonance cavity of a guitar or violin, okay? Well, that it to show you how things come together. The thought came to mind that the pyramid might act as a secondary resonance cavity. And like putting a guitar inside a guitar. And that those elf waves could be concentrated in that second cavity. And those elf waves could, in fact...
Wes, let's talk a little bit about them breaking into... I guess you had all this anti-gravitational material, the thing that you had developed using the Ra system. You had it in storage, is that right? And then somebody took it? It just disappeared overnight?
Well, yeah. The place was absolutely... There wasn't this was a pretty good storage facility, you know. It's pretty large. You know, they took even everything, even the dust off the floor. You know what I'm saying? I would say that the storage, what would you say, the size of this room is about twice as big as this. And the lock was a key. It was not a combination lock. And when we went there, we had to, of course, unlock the door to get into it. So whoever got in there had, you know, unlocked it with key or... And the thing that always comes to my mind is this thing was made of, we had special alloy balls, spheres, that were one-third iron, one-third cobalt, and one-third nickel, which is the three magnetics. And they were hollow. And they were filled with the element thallium. Now, thallium is number 81 on the atomic periodic table, but it's also poisonous. So if they ever took it apart, you know, I hope they washed their hands, you know. But they use a thallium in rat poison. But we were using it as a neutral of the Ra system identified thallium as neutral. In fact, today, you see, thallium is number 81. Lead is 82. Now, if you take the three magnetics, you got cobalt. Let's start with iron, cobalt, and nickel. Well, iron, the number of iron is 26. Cobalt 27 and nickel 28. Add those three together, you'll get 81. Those are the three magnetics. Now, 81 is 9 times 9. And 81 times 81 is 6561, which is, if you were looking at that as this, a wavelength, would be the Balmer M3 spectral line of hydrogen. Okay. But back to the thallium. The universe is built on the basis of the Ra system of mathematics. There's no doubt about it. This system is the mathematical language that nature uses to describe itself, from the very smallest atom to the largest galaxy. And when you look at this, for a long time, people say the universe is operating in a state of chaos. It's not. It's working on the order of this mathematical system. And it shows that there is a divine plan. And where there is a divine plan, there's a divine planner. And or a creator of all that is. But the thallium is very important. It's abundant on the Earth, okay, But remember the green fireballs, Jerry, back in the 50s?
Oh, yeah, we talk about those on our shows regularly. In fact, every once in a while you hear of a report of a green fireball these days, but back in the 50s, that was quite common.
Right. I've talked to people that have actually seen them traveling horizontally, you know, one group, I remember, were on their way from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, and the green fireballs just traveling horizontally, and obviously ablaze. The fusions are burning. Well, thallium in Greek means budding twig. And it was, thallium was discovered by a guy looking through a spectroscope and seeing a bright green line. Okay? That's its identification. That's its spectral fingerprint, that bright green line. Now, thallium, we call neutral. Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, and we can come back to it. But thallium, if you put it into any element, can be changed into a plasma. A plasma is, you've got solid, liquid gas, and plasma, super hot gas. And if these ships were operating using a thallium plasma, if that plasma tube became ruptured for some reason, you're going to get green fire. And that's exactly what you got there.
So that would explain why it was
right.
Green.
The color of the green fireballs is the same wavelength as the that prominent spectral line in thallium.
Rod Wes was talking to us about the pyramids and the first message from outer space. It's amazing that all the things just kind of go together.
It does tie together. There's everything that Wes has been talking about, and there's things that he's been sharing with me that go back to 75 and go back to right to today. Everything ties together and is based on pi and phi.
I know, Wes, we're going to get into, we do a lot of UFO sightings, and before the program's over, I want to talk to you about UFO sightings and earthquakes. They seem to be very connected, and we'll get into that in a minute, but let's talk a little bit more about, I don't want to interrupt you, about the pyramids.
All right.
So this first message is connected to the pyramids,
right.
You say.
Let's do it this way. The people that put these messages on the internet as a game, they call themselves the Contact Project, and these messages were on the internet as a game for 7 years. Now, two messages gave us a clue that they're real. Mainly, the number, these messages are laid out on tones. You know, it's kind of reminiscent of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You know, you know.
Yes.
The first message, they claim, had 19 tones in it, each one successively a higher pitch. So they assigned the lowest tone the capital letter A, and the highest tone the capital letter S. Well, 19, well, that didn't, that was meaningless. But then they said that the second message had 18. We were talking about that.
Okay.
The second message had 18 new tones, and they just assigned the first tone of that message T and so forth until they ran out of capital letters. Then they started on the small case letters, but what came to my mind was the fact that message number one and number two had 37 tones in it. Okay. So we had 37 tones. Well, after 35 years of working with the Great Pyramid and the Ra system, I immediately recognized that there was a good possibility that those 37 tones had a relationship to a table, which is called the Ra Table of Nines, which is 27, 54, 81, 108, 135. In other words, 27 plus 27 plus 27. That would mean that the, okay, now we look at the message itself, and we have, we're going to say it in their way they would say it, G, B, G. And that's just three little letters there, right? And the other thing they said was that each tone lasted about 0.492 seconds. About. If this is the game, why not say exactly? About. Well, G is the seventh letter of the alphabet. There are seven periods of the periodic table of elements. The Grand Gallery of the Great Pyramid has seven ceilings and 37 individual overlapping stones that compose those ceilings. So then we look at GDG, and it was G's the seventh letter, okay? So the G's are actually like bookends, okay? The only thing important about that little section is the letter B, capital letter B. Well, B's the second letter, right? So we would assign that the value of 54. Now, let's just take the length of the tone, 0.492 seconds, and divide it into 54. The answer was so astonishing. As you say, blows your mind. The answer is a number 109. You know, and so forth. And that number is known in physics as the Rydberg constant for infinite mass. That number is used in simple equations to mathematically determine the spectral lines of hydrogen from the infrared to the ultraviolet. Now, dividing 0.492 into 54 doesn't bring that out exactly. So it turns out that the length of the tone is not about 0.492, it's actually 0.492075. If you divide 0.492075 into 54, you get the Rydberg constant. Now, they claimed in their game that these messages were received on the 1420 megahertz frequency, which is known as the hydrogen resonance frequency. Okay, sometimes they refer to it as the magic frequency. It's the frequency that they believe any extraterrestrial race would utilize, you know, because it would be common to any intelligent beings that was what that was.